begin?
A Radio, the first and third Wednesday of every month from 6 to 7 p.m.
Bringing you news and information about local and international people's movements.
Portland's only feminist anti-authoritarian radio collective, only on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland.
And welcome back to the Wednesday Morning Radio Zine. Rounding out, we have Carlos Chavez hosting an update on the current situation regarding the rights of immigrants in the U.S. And following these couple of interviews, I'll have some information for you about events in the next couple, 3 days connected to this. And so here is KBOO producer Carlos Chavez.
The latest immigration bill, H.R. 4437, also known as the Sensenbrenner Bill, is raising lots of concern for immigrants and advocates of the immigrant community. I spoke with Siobhan Sheridan Ayala with Catholic Charities of Oregon and Pam Fawn with the American Friends Service Community regarding the immigrant struggle and how legislation and current law overlook core issues.
My name is Siobhan Sheridan Ayala, and I'm an attorney and a program director of Catholic Charities Immigration Legal Services.
My understanding is that you pretty much deal also, I mean, mainly with the immigration legal services, legal representation, advice, advocacy, that type of thing?
Yes, we provide legal assistance to low-income immigrants throughout the state of Oregon in their immigration matters, which includes both affirmative applications, meaning that the person makes the application on their own, in cases like family visa, petitions, domestic violence petitions, asylum applications. We also represent victims of human trafficking, and we also represent people in removal proceedings, once they're in removal proceedings.
Okay. What are some of the issues that you run into facing some of these cases?
Well, a common issue is the fact that because of how complex the laws are, there can be people within the same family where certain family members are eligible or they already have immigration status, like they're lawful permanent residents or they're citizens, and then other family members, because of could be a variety of minor factors, are not eligible for anything under immigration law, or if they are eligible, the waiting period can be, I think right now to petition a brother or sister from the Philippines is an over 20-year waiting period. If you're going to petition your spouse and you're from a lawful permanent resident from Mexico, it's about 6 to 7 year wait currently. Dealing with the separation of families is a common problem. I think that there's a lot of proposals right now in Congress may or may not address that issue.
What are some of the proposals that you see out there that we should watch for? I think many of us are aware of the Sensenbrenner bill that's out there. That's very, some say that is probably the harshest bill that's gone to the House and now the Senate in 70 years.
Excuse me. This debate has been going on for a while, actually, and there's a number of different proposals out there, and the Sensenbrenner bill was passed in December, and it included a number of provisions.
Passed at the House, right?
It passed, right. Thank you. It's passed the House, and it's coming to a vote in the Senate this week. I'm in the Judiciary Committee.
Mm-hmm.
In the next month or 2 months, this will sort of be unfolding as exactly what provisions of the Sensenbrenner bill could be incorporated into a law that addresses comprehensive immigration reform. Some of the problematic provisions of the Sensenbrenner bill are that it makes unlawful presence in the United States a crime. So basically what that does is it forces police officers to enforce immigration laws. Mm-hmm. Well, it would be criminal law. Mm-hmm. But it would basically get local law enforcement involved in enforcement of immigration laws. And this is can be problematic for a number of reasons. currently, there's you know, very large undocumented population, 11 to 12 million is estimated. And if people are afraid to call their police when they're a victim of a crime, if their husband or they're getting beaten and they're afraid to call the police because of getting arrested on their immigration status, they're not going to go to the police. And that would create sort of a level of lawlessness in our society that I don't know anybody really wants to create. So that's one provision. Another is that it would make assisting undocumented immigrants a crime if you knew or you should have known that they were undocumented. And so this would really put a lot of people in jail,
including people
who work in the schools, the hospitals, social service agencies, you know, priests, pastors, lots of people would be subject to criminal prosecution for encouraging someone to stay here, which could be something as simple as helping them get an apartment, or it's very broadly defined, and it's unclear how that would be interpreted.
Yeah.
So it could be something as simple as enrolling someone into school or, mm-hmm. or assisting them in any way to find out about how the U.S. system works.
What are some of the other bills that you see out there that we should look out for, and what do you think are some out there that have some of the more progressive plans?
Well, I think that there's no perfect bill out there.
Yeah.
I think all of the bills that are seriously being considered right now have compromises already within them.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
Pardon me?
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think because everyone realizes that this is a really difficult political issue. And so I don't think that anyone wants to propose something that appears to be too generous to mm-hmm. people who are living here in the United States in undocumented status.
I know that Halliburton was awarded a contract in January to start building they were awarded, I believe, a contract from Homeland Security to start building detention centers and building up the border.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that has actually already taken place. There's been, I don't know the exact figures, but the amount of money that has been put in the borders it's more than quadrupled in the last 10 years. It's really increased a lot, and it's not proven to be a very effective use of resources. So that doesn't surprise me that there's more detention centers being built. Currently, even under current immigration law, if you're just enforcing them, there's just millions of people here that are here in undocumented status, and there's ways for people to be arrested now without the Sensenbrenner bill even passing. I think there's some key issues that are being debated right now mm-hmm. in the different proposals, and one is, I think one of the most important issues is, will a bill provide a path to earn citizenship, or will it create a temporary status that, in essence, creates a permanent underclass in our society? And a lot of these bills, like there's the Cornyn-Kyle proposal, there's another one that was introduced by Specter, who's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, which these bills would not provide a path. They would provide status for people living here and a way for temporary workers to enter the United States with visas and be able to work here. And actually, the Cornyn-Kyle would only allow the family to come temporarily during part of the year, but then they'd have to leave. But they would not provide a way for people basically to earn citizenship. They would be required to leave, or they'd be Specter bill would allow people to stay here if they leave after 6 years for a year, but they would never be allowed to basically immigrate. And a lot of people feel that this is just contrary to American value system of opportunity, hard work, and compassion. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops has actually signed on in support of the McCain-Kennedy bill, which would create a temporary worker program, but it would allow people an opportunity to earn their legal permanent resident and put them on a pathway to citizenship. So I think that is one of the main issues that is going to be debated. You know, people talk about this temporary worker program as if that's sort of the main thing. That I think that's pretty much settled, that there is going to be a temporary worker program. It's just whether or not at the end of it there's going to be an opportunity for people to stay here and basically build their lives.
Yeah. Now, the thing that I worry about that, though, is the abuse of, you know, anytime I hear about any type of guest worker type program, it always reminds me of the Bracero program, something that was used from the 40s through the 60s that was, that actually, it really took advantage of a lot of the farm workers and industrial workers that came across the border to work. A lot of them didn't get paid. You know, of course, they were working hours, long hours that they weren't getting paid for, and benefits and just regular human rights abuses were occurring. How could we push for something that would allow people to work here and not get abused like that?
I think that's an excellent point. I won't say most of the bills, but the Kennedy-McCain bill does include certain provisions that would beef up sort of employer accountability. Some people say it doesn't go far enough. The Corn and Kyle bill, it's really slim in terms of creating sort of employer responsibility towards immigrants. But I think that is something that people need to be asking those questions. I mean, if we're going to create this new workforce in our society, the Specter bill, all of the bills actually are required to show, the employer is going to be required to show that they're not displacing an American worker. But if those, if the bills don't include something that ensures that the employers are going to have to be accountable to certain laws, then they're going to be really encouraged to exploit workers and to displace American workers. Actually, the AFL-CIO has taken a view that they're against all of these bills because they're against a guest worker program, period.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do with that abuse of power. It seems like business and a lot of the legislation that's being passed is really going hand in hand. I mean, I guess that's pretty much been the deal from day one. But as far as immigrants' rights go, the bills seem to be beneficial to large companies who want to exploit workers.
Well, and I think it sort of goes back to this issue of whether people will have a right to citizenship at the end, because is a law going to be passed that basically we take people's hard earning, the most fruitful years of their life are spent here in the United States, and they give a lot to this country, and then in their old age they're required to leave and have no security system. You know, they're not eligible for retirement. I mean, is that the kind of system that we want to create?
Yeah.
Is that how we want to be known throughout the world, actually? Because those people are going to be going back to other countries, and they're going to be telling their stories there.
Yeah. You're always going to hear, you know, we have plenty of people here already. Why are we going to keep allowing more immigrants to come in, take away jobs, benefits, abusing the welfare program? All of these things tend to come up. How much truth is really in all of that?
Well, I think there's a lot of myths out there about the economic drain that immigrants are to our society. In reality, immigrants are, it is because of immigrants, I think, that the U.S. economy is so vibrant. For instance, a range of studies have found that immigrants pay between $90 and $140 billion a year in federal, state, and local taxes. So that's $140 billion paid by immigrants. So if Congress were to pass a law that suddenly deported or, you know, required the departure of, you know, that those 12 million people, that would be a huge economic hit to this country. So we would really be struggling to recover from that. But just on that issue, I mean, if you want me to expand, I think that, you know, immigrants aren't eligible for welfare. I think that's another common misconception. Mm. And most of the money that immigrants make, they don't send back to their home country. And a lot of immigrants that come here, they have an entrepreneurial sort of spirit, and a lot of people, times people create jobs. Even here at Catholic Charities, we'll see people who, you know, who've started jobs and or started businesses as an immigrant. So that's pretty inspiring to see that.
Pam Fawn with AFSC.
Do you want to just introduce yourself? And
yeah, my name is Pam Fawn, and I work with the American Friends Service Committee, and I direct a youth program that works directly with immigrant and refugee youth here in the Portland area. The AFSC is a Quaker-based organization that works on peace and justice issues. One of the things that we feel that is really important within the justice discourse is this question of immigration and the trying to encourage people to see the perspective that immigration is an absolute human right, knowing that the migration of human beings from country to country, across borders, across seas, is due to the fact that there are, you know, that war is happening in their country or that political or economic instability creates the need for people to move across borders. And for us to realize that, you know, those are external things that, that human beings, you know, everyday human beings don't necessarily have control over, you know, political bodies or governments, and that they need to move because their lives are in danger. And so really, really trying to educate people about that reality, that immigration is a human right, and that in particular here in this country, we have to address what happens now that we have so many immigrants here, or that there is such, that the U.S. is such an attractive place to come if you're an immigrant.
I think a lot of people are more familiar with the Mexican perspective of immigration just because it's something that seems to be dealt with more often. But I'd like to hear more about the Asian perspective of the whole issue.
Well, as it relates to the question of the Sensenbrenner bill, looking at it at first glance, the Sensenbrenner really focuses more on undocumented people, as well as the question of what happens to American citizens or U.S. citizens who assist or encourage undocumented people working in this country. And so at first glance, you wouldn't suspect that Asian Americans or Asian immigrants would have anything to do with this bill. But if we look at immigration on a larger level, more holistically, the question of whether or not within the Sensenbrenner, whether or not people are undocumented or documented, the Sensenbrenner still allows for greater enforcement on our streets at a local level, so that regardless of what your status, even if you are, say, for many Asian immigrants, they do have legal residency here in the U.S., but that is very tentative. Oftentimes, if you know, we have a lot of young people, a lot of young Asian men may get picked up by local law enforcement for, you know, traffic violations, shoplifting, random violations that they get picked up for and eventually detained for, that they can be adjudicated through the immigration system, and that puts a lot of stress on not only families for separating them, but also just in general, the ultimate question of is detaining an immigrant as well as deporting an immigrant, which is happening a lot amongst Asian youth, is that Asian youth are being picked up or adjudicated. Oftentimes what happens is, is that, you know, they have alien residency or they have, like, legal residency here in the United States. They came into this country as young children and have never naturalized. And so when they become teenagers or in their early 20s, they may get picked up for, you know, random traffic violations or shoplifting or somehow get adjudicated. What's been happening, particularly with Cambodian youth, is that they're being deported back to Cambodia, even though they may have come here at age 3, but now they're 33, and they're being sent back. And that in and of itself is problematic, because you've got somebody who's essentially American and has every right to be here, but with these new immigration laws, you're seeing mass deportation for any reason. And almost reasons from our perspective seem fabricated, but they're clearly doing them in a legal manner. They're going through legal channels to make sure that it's, you know, within their right or within ICE's right to deport people. And a lot of the new immigration legislation is creating a more of an environment where law enforcement, local law enforcement, can become immigration authorities without training, as well as the larger opportunities to deport people in general, even though they may legally be here. So that's a concern for the Asian community. Another concern is really trying to look at the larger historical context for immigration policy, in that, like, if you kind of, you know, skim down all the major immigration decisions since the inception of this country, you'll see that it's been largely to prevent foreign nationals from gaining citizenship here, and it's based on race. The mass deportations, you know, Operation Wetback, things like that, mass deportations of Chinese workers after the railroad was finished. All of these are instances in where, you know, the U.S. government wants you to come work here, but they don't necessarily want you to stay and live here, even though you may have had children here. And your children may be citizens, but you're not allowed to stay. And so that, you know, just on if we're looking at the human rights issue, you know, why would you want to split up families? Because that, you know, causes some major, you know, social strain within a country. Like, so if a parent has to go back to Mexico or Cambodia or wherever they're from, what happens to that 10-year-old child that gets left here, or that 18-year-old child that gets left here? You know, you're
and what happens to the people that are being uprooted, having to start all over again?
Mm-hmm. Well, and they're being uprooted already because of kind of the economic implications or the economic, like, instability in their country that's being caused by larger questions, that's being caused by globalization, like the fact that labor has to move across borders, or human beings have to move across borders, because the corporations are moving across borders and changing where the labor is available. Those are the larger questions that I think a lot of people aren't asking, or a lot of people aren't addressing, especially for, you know, the Asian communities that have a lot of connection still with their families back home in whatever Asian country they might be from. That's a huge concern, where employment is happening and where employment is available. So,
I think that speaks really to the heart of what all of this is about.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the rally now.
So the rally is this Saturday, which is Saturday, March 4th. At Pioneer Courthouse Square at 12 noon, and we're going to meet there and rally, and really we're looking to encourage as many people, regardless of your status, regardless of your race, and regardless of your cultural affiliation or community affiliation. We believe that immigration reform and policymaking at this era of and time in this country is important to everyone, citizen or non-citizen. And that everyone needs to realize that the functionality of this country absolutely depends on the people who work hard for this country. And that includes, regardless of status, that includes everyone who chooses to reside within our borders.
Well said. Well, for those of you that want to find out more information about this rally, Saturday, noon, Pioneer Square.
Yeah, you can find out more about the rally online at
Pcun, www.pcun org for Pikun.
Or you can call the American Friends Service Committee here in Portland. You can call Pedro Sosa at 503-230-9427 or email him at psosa@afsc.org.
You can find some basic general information about the rally as well on the Chuco Radio website, www.chucoradio.com.
We do have just a few minutes here before Democracy Now! Kicks in at 11. I'm going to give you a little bit of information regarding events connected to that fine couple of interviews from Carlos Chavez. First, I just want to reiterate the fact that unless you are descended from any of the several hundred tribes of people here before Columbus got here, you too come from immigrants to this country. I do, and bet most of the people listening to my voice do as well. Keep that in mind. Tonight, at the SEIU Local 49 Hall, located just south of Powell on Southeast 26th Avenue, at 7 p.m., there is an immigration forum, Learning from the Past for the Struggles of the Future. And tomorrow at the Portland State University Food for Thought Cafe, located at room 26 in the basement of Smith Student Union, Southwest Broadway on the PSU campus. Tomorrow, Thursday, March 2nd, from 4:30 to 6:30, there will be an event where you can learn about perspectives on immigration from a former guest worker. And you can hear from a former Mexican guest worker talking about what you can do to block the Border Patrol Anti-Terrorism and Illegal Immigration Control Act. This is a bilingual event. Tomorrow, Thursday the 2nd, 4:30 to 6:30, Food for Thought Cafe, PSU campus. And as Carlos and guests mentioned, Saturday, March 4th at noon, Pioneer Square, corner of Southwest 6th and Yamhill, accessible by every bus line almost in Portland and all the light rail. There is a march for the respect of all workers. For more information on the march in Portland, you can call either 503-233-6787 or 230-9427. In Woodburn, you can call 982-0243, and in Salem, 503-763-1694. We got Democracy Now! Coming up in just a minute. At 5 p.m. tonight is the KBOO Evening News, 5:30 Free Speech Radio News, and then at 6 on Circle A Radio, you can hear about the anti-nuclear movement with several past and present activists who will answer the question, whatever happened to the anti-nuclear movement? The Circle A women will also be discussing the Bush administration's push toward expanded nuclear weapons manufacturing and the highly controversial storage proposal for high-level nuclear waste at the Yucca Mountain Nuclear Waste Site in Nevada. Next Wednesday is International Women's Day. KBOO has 24 solid hours of programming regarding that. I don't know if it's up on the website yet, but if you're a member, you already got your March program guide, or you're about to, and the schedule is in there. So tune in for that. This is the Ethnic Heritage Ensemble doing a little version there of Freedom Jazz Dance. The time is 11 a.m. This is KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland, Oregon, and it's time now for Democracy Now!
From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
When they were putting in the numbing into my hand, I passed out. And I've never passed out before, so it was quite shocking when I was waking up, and I had no idea where I was, and they haven't even put the chip in yet, so I had to lie down and kind of like regain consciousness and think about where I was and what I was doing. And
spy chips. Major corporations are working right now to install tiny tracking devices on all consumer products. What about in your arm or in your kids? We'll speak with a consumer privacy expert and an embedded journalist, that is, a reporter who embedded a radio frequency identification, RFID, in her arm. But first, an unprecedented settlement. The U.S. government agrees to pay an Egyptian detainee hundreds of thousands of dollars.
A September 11th detainee who was brutally mistreated in the custody of the federal government is compensated for the first time since the September 11th attacks.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Violence continues to rock Iraq. 23 people were killed, 58 wounded in a car bombing today in Baghdad. Over 80 people have died since Tuesday. According to the Washington Post, at least 1,300 people have died in violence since last week's bombing of a holy Shiite shrine in Samarra. In other news, tens of thousands of people gathered in New Delhi today to protest a visit by President Bush to India. A police spokesperson said the crowd exceeded 100,000 people. This is Abdul Hussein, a spokesperson for one of the protests.
Welcoming a person like him is like welcoming a murderer, and he has become a militant and a warmonger. He is a war president. So welcoming a person like him does not make any sense or have any meaning in a country like India. And welcoming him in the country of the Mahatma will desecrate our land.
Dozens of protests have been planned ahead of President Bush's three-day visit. During his stay, Bush is expected to sign a controversial deal to sell India nuclear fuel from the United States. On his way to India, President Bush stopped in Afghanistan for a surprise visit. During his five-hour stopover, the president addressed U.S. troops and met with Afghan President Hamid Karzai. The Associated Press is reporting a helicopter traveling in the president's air convoy to the presidential palace fired at an unspecified target on the ground. It was the president's first visit to Afghanistan. Hours before the president landed, the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency said the growing insurgency in Afghanistan poses a greater threat than at any point since the U.S. invasion in 2001. In testimony before Congress, Lieutenant General Michael Maples said attacks within Afghanistan are up 20% last year. The increase included a fourfold rise in suicide bombings and a doubling of the use of makeshift bombs. Meanwhile, in neighboring Pakistan, the government says it killed three dozen people in an assault on a militant training camp near the Afghan border. In the occupied territories, the top military commander of the Palestinian group Islamic Jihad was killed in an Israeli airstrike earlier today. Khaled Dakhtouh was assassinated as he traveled in his car through a busy street in Gaza City. At least two other people were wounded in the attack. An Islamic Jihad spokesperson vowed revenge. A new poll from Zogby International shows nearly three-quarters of U.S. troops in Iraq believe the U.S. should pull out within a year. One-quarter of those surveyed believe the U.S. should leave now. And only one in five U.S. troops want to heed President Bush's pledge that U.S. forces stay, quote, as long as they're needed. The poll also found an overwhelming majority of U.S. troops believe the widely discredited theory that Saddam Hussein was involved in the 9/11 attacks. 90% said the Iraq war was a retaliation for Saddam Hussein's supposed role in 9/11.
Meanwhile, the Washington Post is reporting an Army study has found more than one in three U.S. troops who served in Iraq later sought help for mental health problems. According to the report, soldiers and Marines returning from Iraq reported more distress than those returning from Afghanistan and other countries. More than half all service members returning from Iraq report they had felt, quote, in great danger of being killed there. And over 2,400 reported having suicidal thoughts. Steve Robinson, head of the National Gulf War Resource Center, said, quote, in Vietnam, there were safe areas where people could go and rest and recuperate. That doesn't happen in Iraq. Every place is a war zone, he said. In other news, Knight Ritter is reporting the White House repeatedly ignored early intelligence warnings that the armed insurgency in Iraq was almost entirely local and growing in size. A national intelligence estimate as early as October 2003 said the insurgency is fueled mostly by local conditions such as the presence of U.S. troops in Iraq. It also said outside forces are playing almost no role in the insurgency. Robert Hutchings, the former chair of the National Intelligence Council from 2003 to 2005, said, quote, frankly, senior officials simply weren't ready to pay attention to analysis that didn't conform to their own optimistic scenarios. Another former high-ranking intelligence official said, quote, this was stuff the White House and the Pentagon did not want to hear. They were constantly grumbling that the people who were writing these kind of downbeat assessments needed to get on the team, were not team players, and were sitting up there at CIA headquarters in Langley sucking their thumbs. This news from Japan. A new study has found scores of survivors of the U.S. atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945 are still suffering health problems. The Radiation Effects Research Foundation found those survivors who were youngest and most exposed to radiation at the time faced the highest risk of illness today. The study was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Over 200,000 people were killed in the bombings, August 1945. In Washington, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez left open the possibility Wednesday that the Bush administration's warrantless domestic spy program is more extensive than has been acknowledged. In a letter to senators reported in the Washington Post, Gonzalez attempted to clarify testimony he gave before the Senate Judiciary Committee last month. During that testimony, Gonzalez said the program was all that had been authorized by President Bush. But in Tuesday's letter, Gonzalez wrote, quote, I did not and could not address any other classified intelligence activities. I was confining my remarks to the terrorist surveillance program as described by the president. Bruce Fein, a former government lawyer who served under three presidents, said, quote, it seems to me he's conceding that there are other NSA surveillance programs ongoing that the president hasn't told anyone about. Meanwhile, the USA Patriot Act moved a step closer to reapproval Tuesday. The Senate voted to end debate on proposed changes to the act, setting the stage for a final vote that could come as early as today. Renewal had stalled in Congress amid bipartisan concerns. The new measure lacked adequate safeguards for civil liberties. The proposed legislation still includes several provisions that have riled civil liberties groups. Among them, the renewed Patriot Act would still allow the FBI to obtain internet and email records from library computers. And a coalition representing over 15 million people have started a campaign to oppose internet service provider AOL's plans to implement a so-called email tax. Under AOL's new proposal, mass emailers would be allowed to pay a fee to bypass filters blocking unsolicited email. Smaller groups would have no guarantees their messages would get out to their recipients without paying the fee. This is Tim Carr of the media reform group Free Press.
We have large email providers, including AOL, that want to turn email communication into a privileged realm for those who can afford to pay a corporate tax. AOL's pay-to-send scheme threatens the free and open Internet as we know it. It needs to remain a level playing field for all.
That was Tim Carr of Free Press. The website for the campaign is DearEOL.com. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.